Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Windows Server 2003 R2. My name is Aaron Suzuki. In this session, we're going to do an overview of the features and enhancements contained in Microsoft Windows Server 2003 R2. We'll start with where Server R2 fits in the Windows development cycle to give us some context. Then we'll look at all the core scenarios, starting with the features that simplify branch management. Active Directory Federation Service is a significant new feature added to Windows Server 2003 R2. We'll talk about that in the Identity Management section. The last key scenario is Storage Management. There are a couple additional pieces which we'll also touch upon briefly at the end. There are some things you need to know to really understand this session. As we go through today's session, you'll hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we'll explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To help you out, we've listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterward. We're covering some broad topics in this session. A few items that will be of value to you in getting the most from this session are experience with distributed file system, knowledge of Active Directory, and general awareness of storage technologies will help as well. While we don't get in too deep on anything, we'll assume basic knowledge of these areas, so we consider this a level 200 session. Now, let's look at the agenda. We're going to start today by talking about the release cycle. We'll use that to set the tone for the conversation. Then we'll get into the features. The goals and philosophies of our Windows Server roadmap are to deliver best-of-breed functionality with greater consistency and more predictability following a major and update release cycle for our customers. Examples of major releases are Windows Server 2003 and Longhorn. Windows Server 2003 R2 is our first update release. It'll be followed by future update releases such as Longhorn R2. Update releases allow Windows Server to deliver mid-cycle incremental value to customers in a manner which makes it very easy for them to consume. Now let's review the scenarios that Windows Server 2003 R2 addresses. Windows Server 2003 R2 combines Windows Server 2003 SP1 with X64 support, includes Windows SharePoint services with the operating system, as well as Unix interoperability features, plus the extensibility and new features associated with the .NET Framework 2.0. These features address three key scenarios in important ways to help enhance productivity, simplify management, and help improve security. For branch offices, Windows Server 2003 R2 centralizes backup and management of file and print, high availability, and collaboration. The identity management scenario introduces Active Directory Federation services, which facilitates web single sign-on, numerous collaboration scenarios, plus identity management features for Unix interoperability. Efficient storage management enables simplified SAN management for IT workers who do not have SAN expertise, as well as management tools to optimize file servers, and still more Unix interoperability for storage with Unix NFS integration features. Next, we'll talk about the branch management scenario and how it centralizes and simplifies administration. Let's start with why we even need to address this scenario. The two broad challenges that the branch market faces are WAN costs and latency, and local manageability. This is due to their rather paradoxical requirements: local application performance with easy manageability. Simultaneously, many customers are in the process of, or have already consolidated their central servers. They're now looking to branch servers as the next big consolidation gain. However, branch servers pose a unique challenge, particularly where additional bandwidth is expensive or unavailable. The productivity losses that occur when servers are centralized is usually not acceptable, and the possibility of losing connectivity altogether is normally too much of a risk. With these broad trends converging, the solution is to keep the servers in the branch, but treat the manager of them much like disposable appliances. This provides a nice balance of productivity for the branch office workers and reduced administrative burden for IT. This has motivated Microsoft to create a vision for the future around this scenario. The branch server functionality of Windows Server 2003 R2 is the most recent step in Microsoft's roadmap to more effective branch server management. Overall, the vision is to make branch management easy to deploy and replace. Administration free, meaning that it does not require unique administration located in branch sites, and that configuration is centralized and simplified. And finally, that branch office IT tasks are accelerated. The concept of acceleration extends to efficient use of WAN resources. For example, transferring only file deltas, and relying on the local cache to handle local requests and to forward to central servers when WAN is available. Next, we'll talk about the specific features of Windows Server 2003 R2 that further this vision. Windows Server 2003 R2 centralizes branch server management tasks. This allows you to more easily manage the infrastructure remotely. Improvements to the distributed file system help enable this. Windows Server 2003 R2 also introduces a new feature in the print management console. Overall, these features will help you to keep your organization running smoothly from an IT perspective by consolidating these tasks into a single interface that allows you to manage multiple servers with finer control. In the next slides, we'll talk about how these features deliver manageability. DFS in Windows Server 2003 R2 features a brand new management UI. The updated DFS snap-in provides a hierarchical view of namespace and other new features, such as rename links, drag-and-drop functionality. DFS takes advantage of MMC 3.0, further simplifying and accelerating management. There are also new features in the DFS namespace service, including failback. Failback is a new feature in Windows Server 2003 R2. In contrast to failover, which has been available in previous versions of Windows Server. DFS failback is configured by the administrator at the root or link. You can also prioritize target server referrals with DFS, as well as set priority of servers to which you fail back. These are the namespace features. Now let's talk about replication features. In conjunction with DFS namespaces, DFS replication provides a highly available WAN-friendly distributed file system. Remote differential compression examines files and sends only the changed data across the wire, reducing demand and impact upon bandwidth. You can throttle bandwidth based on a weekly schedule and modify the bandwidth allocation to suit the bandwidth available to your file servers and your business model. DFSR also gets a new user interface in Windows Server 2003 R2. So let's take a closer look at RDC. Remote differential compression is a great new component to DFS for a number of reasons. First, it is a new Microsoft algorithm that examines the network. This can have major impact upon a network. For example, if you have a 3.5 megabyte PowerPoint presentation, like this one that we're reviewing, and you change just the text on a few slides that totals, say, 16 kilobytes in changes, when it comes time to replicate, without RDC, the full file would need to be replicated. Full file replication would take anywhere from 10 minutes on the low end of a 56K dial-up connection to 70 seconds on a half-meg DSL connection on the high end. With RDC, only the 16K in text changes would be copied across the network and would take 3 seconds on the low end and less than a second on the high end. This can result in very meaningful savings in bandwidth. Now, let's take a look at a demonstration of DFS in action. In this demonstration, we'll see how DFS simplifies branch management. This demonstration will walk through the various tasks in the Distributed File System Management User Interface and give us some insight into the underlying technologies for DFS namespaces and DFS replication. We'll start by adding the namespace folder adatum/users/userdata. Note that the two most commonly addressed scenarios are at the top of the screen: publishing data to branches and collecting data from branches, using R2 as a general-purpose file replicator. Addition of a DFS namespace is accomplished through a wizard, which we can kick off through the Actions pane. This is a new feature included in MMC 3.0, which is a feature built into Windows Server 2003 R2. We start by entering the server name. In this case, it will be the London server, which is the local host. The name for the namespace will be Users. And we'll leave the default of a domain-based namespace. We confirm the options, and the wizard provides us some status as it creates the namespace. Now that we've created a namespace, we'll associate the namespace with a namespace folder on another server. We start by adding another server to the namespace. This is done by selecting Add Namespace Server from the Actions pane. By completing one simple form, we add a second server to the namespace. Associating namespaces with shared folders on multiple servers turns disparate network shares into truly WAN-spanning shares. Once the second server is added, we have to modify the security settings. We'll grant users read and change privileges so they can save files to this namespace. By means of shared namespaces, organizations can easily publish to branch servers and centrally archive files, in addition to ensuring that users transparently fail back to local assets when the WAN connection is interrupted. Next, we will add a new namespace folder to the namespace. Again, we go to the Actions pane and complete a simple form. In this case, we will simply add a new folder to a shared folder target on our file servers. It will be a user data folder. The new user data folder that we are creating needs to be created in an explicit location associated with a unique folder on the target servers. It makes sense to use the network shares we've added to the namespace. So that we maintain redundancy, we'll add the new folder to both of the servers we have added to the namespace. Once the new folder is created, we need to create a replication group. This process will allow us to dictate the primary member, probably a file server in the home office. It will also allow us to specify the replication method and the replication schedule. This is accomplished through the completion of a wizard. It is by means of the replication group that we manage data synchronization for all of the individual folders that constitute our namespaces and the namespace folders. Thus, administrators with limited bandwidth can throttle the bandwidth consumed by DFS replication, and they can schedule it to occur after business hours. DFS features in Windows Server 2003 allow failback. Now we'll manage the failback targeting for our namespace servers. In the properties of the namespace folder we created, we'll select Clients Fail Back to Preferred Targets. With this complete, we'll make one more security modification. We're going to grant write and modify privileges to all users of this namespace folder. Next, we'll kick off the performance monitor on the London server so we can watch for changes in server utilization when the shared folder is used. In Windows Server 2003 R2, rather than having to copy the entire file, which uses significant bandwidth, to record a change, remote differential compression, or RDC, and DFS replication need only transmit the delta between the old file and the new file just saved. To illustrate this, we'll change to our Berlin client computer, and from the Berlin client computer, we'll use our namespace folder remotely. With the performance monitor running on the London server, we'll simply access the shared namespace folder. We're going to copy a file from our local system into this folder. When we change back to the London server, we can see the network traffic in yellow. Notice there's a small amount of bandwidth used. If we move back to the client and now make a small change to the presentation, we'll be able to look back on the London server and see the change again. As we can see, quite a small spike in traffic was required to save the modified presentation, as opposed to when we initially saved the entire file. This represents a quantum leap in WAN efficiency improvement using RDC and DFS replication. The Print Management Console enables remote and scalable management of print servers. The PMC facilitates easier management of drivers, push of printers to their users, an easy way to view richer status on printers, and it allows you to group printers by status. The way in which printers are grouped in the PMC enables one-to-many management of printers and print servers by a single administrator. This directly alleviates the requirement of IT knowledge in the branch surrounding print management. So let's quickly recap what we've discussed. The key scenario to enable is to enable the ability to centrally back up the contents of locally generated file data in a WAN-friendly way without the need for local backup devices or administration. Another key requirement is making sure that file data is highly available if the branch server is out of commission, especially if it might take a day or two to get the local server back up and running. Also, providing a WAN-friendly mechanism of allowing branch office staff to access centrally published documents and collaborate with each other, including those in different branches. The key technology enablers in R2 are a new version of FRS called Distributed File System, or DFS, which consists of two parts, replication, DFSR, and namespaces, DFSN, that provides incredible efficiency gains over the WAN with a new compression technology called RDC. RDC provides the ability for just the changes to files to be shipped over the wire. For example, a change to a couple of words in a 3.5 megabyte PowerPoint file will now only require 16 KB to be shipped over the wire. RDC is a key component of DFSR. Furthermore, the DFS management console has been rewritten for R2. The highlights of the new console include a hierarchical namespace view, the ability to rename links and projects, and makes it easier to delegate DFS administration tasks to non-domain admins. DFS will be manageable from the same console, but the distinctions are being made clearer. Clients can now fail back to a preferred server when its availability is restored, rather than being stuck to the hub server that they failed over to. We're also providing a long overdue print management console that makes it so much easier to manage print servers and print queues, including forms and drivers, as well as making it easier to push new printer connections and drivers to client PCs. The PMC allows you to create consolidated views of printers across print servers based on parameters you specify. For instance, only showing printers that are not ready with print jobs. It also provides a much easier mechanism for managing forms and drivers. Other technologies revolving around management include the new Web Services for Management, or WS Management Protocol, and the Intelligent Platform Management Interface, or IPMI, which enables you to have more granular hardware management. Using a new WMI provider in R2, all WMI scripts and tools can access IPMI. Soon you can expect to see guidance from Microsoft in the Windows Server System Reference Architecture called the Branch Office Infrastructure Solution that will provide prescriptive architectural guidance on how to design, build, deploy, and manage a branch office infrastructure using Microsoft technologies. Next, we'll talk about how Windows Server 2003 R2 enables identity management. IT administrators today face exponential growth in service requests involving identity and access management. Organizations need to both manage how users access applications on a variety of application platforms and to extend their IT infrastructure to provide partners, suppliers, customers, and remote employees access to an increasing number of applications. At the same time, IT organizations are expected to positively impact their business by improving customer loyalty and retention, reducing operational costs, and responding quickly and efficiently to change. Managing many applications on multiple platforms for a growing number of internal and external users presents administrative and security challenges. You need to provide business partners access to applications and collaboration tools without sacrificing security to the applications or to the internal network. You need to limit the number of passwords users need to get secure access to applications. Having too many passwords often leads users to employ poor security practices, such as writing passwords on sticky notes. Managing the administrative burden of keeping duplicate user data in multiple application directories while not overloading a centralized directory with application-specific data is a major challenge. Ideally, you'd probably like to leverage existing administrative tools across a larger set of application environments. There are features in Windows Server 2003 R2 that help address these challenges. Windows Server 2003 R2 offers functionality that extends connectivity and control of identity management for internal and external collaboration. The following Windows Server 2003 R2 features deliver distinct advantages for identity and access management. Windows Server 2003 R2 provides Windows and Unix integration, which helps to establish uninterrupted user access and efficient management of network resources. Server for NIS helps integrate Windows and Unix-based network information service servers by enabling an Active Directory domain controller to act as a master NIS server for one or more NIS domains. Identity management for Unix includes an easy-to-use wizard that a Windows domain administrator can use to export NIS domain maps to Active Directory entries. Password synchronization helps integrate Windows and Unix servers by simplifying the process of maintaining secure passwords. With password synchronization, users do not need to maintain separate passwords for their Windows and Unix accounts or remember to change the password in multiple locations. Password synchronization automatically changes a user password on both Unix and Windows networks whenever the user changes his or her password. Active Directory application mode is an independent mode of Active Directory without infrastructure features. Provides directory services for applications. Operating as a standalone data store or interacting with Active Directory domain controllers, Atom's flexibility enables administrators to tailor their directory services infrastructure to varying degrees of local control or autonomy or shared services. Atom provides a data store and services for accessing that data store. It uses standard application programming interfaces for accessing application data and works with ADFS to provide a user store for extranet application authentication. Finally, ADFS provides web-based extranet authentication and authorization, single sign-on, and federated identity services for Windows Server environments. This increases the value of existing Active Directory deployments to B2C extranet, intracompany federation, and B2B Internet Federation scenarios. Extranet authentication and SSO services extend the strong authentication and distributed session capabilities Windows has for internal networks to internet-facing perimeter networks. Identity federation makes it possible for two organizations to share a user's Active Directory identity information securely over federation trusts, facilitating collaboration with partners and delegating user management. Now let's take a look at Active Directory application mode. Again, Atom is a lightweight domain-independent mode of Active Directory used to provide directory services for applications. Basically, it provides a data store and tools to access the data store. Atom uses the same code as Active Directory, which means it has the same programming model, admin tools, and replication model as Active Directory. One of the key benefits to Atom is its simplicity. It has a simple wizard-based install, not requiring time-consuming installs like DC Promo. Atom also has good schema flexibility and synchronization with Active Directory. You can perform authentication in Active Directory and authorization in Atom for increased security. Next, let's look at a couple scenarios to show how Atom could be used. Let's consider an intranet-based web portal with some personalization features. Active Directory would still be used to perform authentication, but Atom is the repository to store and retrieve the personalization information. Let's look at another scenario. In an extranet scenario, external access could be accomplished via ADFS, a third-party solution, or a custom integration solution. Because Atom can host user objects that are not Windows security principles, but that can be authenticated using Lightweight Directory Access Protocol, Simple Binds, all the user information as well as authorization data for these applications can be stored in Atom. This configuration works well even in heterogeneous environments and even when Active Directory is not present as the infrastructure provider. Web clients are serviced by a portal application that can run on any platform while using Atom as a simple LDAP store. Now, let's take a quick look at Unix identity management features in Windows Server 2003 R2. Historically, there have been barriers to fluid integration of heterogeneous computing environments such that Windows networks were not able to easily interoperate with Unix networks. The features in Windows Server 2003 R2 create a simpler means of integrating the two environments, removing many of the common barriers to interoperation. Windows Server 2003 R2 introduces seamless Unix-Windows interoperability, including the ability to authenticate users across platforms and share files across multiple operating systems. One great advantage to this method of interoperability is that it is tested and supported by Microsoft. Unix Windows cross-platform management provides consolidation of administration and monitoring across platforms. It allows you to consolidate directory data by pulling NIS schema into Active Directory and by performing bidirectional password synchronization and username mapping. These features allow organizations to continue to leverage existing Unix IT skills while maintaining a similar look and feel for administrators and developers in both environments. You can even download or port many of the same utilities you use on Unix or Linux. Windows Server 2003 R2 interoperability features also provide for Unix to Windows application portability. The subsystem for Unix application provides a complete Unix subsystem on the Windows kernel, which gives you the ability to extend Unix applications to Windows via Visual Studio and the .NET framework. Next, we'll briefly review the interoperability technologies, starting with Server for NIS. Server for NIS helps integrate Windows and Unix-based network information service servers by enabling an Active Directory domain controller to act as a master NIS server for one or more NIS domains. Identity management for Unix includes an easy-to-use wizard that a Windows domain administrator can use to export NIS domain maps to Active Directory entries. Once this is done, an Active Directory domain controller running Server for NIS becomes the master server for the NIS domain. Another important interoperability technology is Unix password synchronization. Password synchronization helps integrate Windows and Unix servers by simplifying the process of maintaining secure passwords. With password synchronization, users do not need to maintain separate passwords for their Windows and Unix accounts or remember to change the passwords in multiple locations. Password synchronization automatically changes a user password on the Unix network when the user changes his or her Windows password and vice versa. This is supported on several operating systems, including HP UX 11, Sun Solaris 8 and 9, IBM AIX 5L 5.2, and Red Hat Linux 9.0. Let's move on now to a brand new feature called Active Directory Federation Services, or ADFS. Today, Windows does a pretty good job through Kerberos and Windows Integrated Authentication of taking the Windows login and making a single sign-on experience out of that data to our applications, ISV apps that support integrated authentication, to legacy systems through HIS and BizTalk, to web apps with IIS v6, and through third parties like Ventella and Unix desktops and J2EE applications. It's important people realize just how powerful Windows platform-level authentication technologies are today, but all of this is inside the firewall. ADFS moves authentication outside the firewall and enables application authentication and authorization scenarios across conventional security boundaries, allowing single sign-on to a number of different applications, including Windows file and print servers, Microsoft applications, 390 and AS400 applications, ERP applications, third-party integrated apps, web applications via IIS, Unix and J2EE applications. This can be done without sacrificing security through robust but still flexible authentication with Kerberos, X509, VPN Radius, 802.1x, LDAP, or password, or basic web authentication. Now let's take a step back and look kind of at the longer-term vision. Microsoft has a vision for identity management that transcends a specific product. Ultimately, the vision is that identity management needs to be simplified to a point that the cost and level of effort required to perform identity management is as low as possible. In the past, the paradigm was that of an application silo, where each application had its own identity system. Most applications were internally focused. As a result, the application was limited as to the business value it could provide. Today, there is considerable custom integration of applications and identity systems. Importance of serving external users in addition to internal users has driven integration, but much of it is performed on a custom or one-off basis. As a result, there's a high cost of value for these systems, and they leave considerable work to IT organizations to serve the needs of the applications and their users. The future view is to enable increasingly connected systems through federation, and by creating and deploying applications that are built to be extended. These systems should be easy to configure, implement, and use, and if that can be accomplished, the cost is low and the value is high. So in terms of where we are in transition from an environment where identity integration products and services were required to accomplish identity management and integration tasks, and we're moving to an environment where the platform contains the tools to enable identity management and interoperability and can be accomplished with web services. Now let's see how ADFS enables customers to do more with less. The Microsoft solution to the identity management problem in Windows Server 2003 R2 is Active Directory Federation Services. Customers have been enjoying the benefits of intranet single sign-on using Active Directory, and ADFS will allow customers to extend this capability across security and organizational boundaries to partners and suppliers. A combined web SSO and federation solution that makes it easier to do business with each other. Customers will be able to reduce costs and effort when implementing web SSO for internal systems or across security boundaries with multiple partners. With ADFS, user ID and passwords will be managed by organizations that own them and not the hosting company. This reduces the cost of IT management by reducing the number of directories required. Help desk calls for password resets, and also improve security as organizations can internally enforce strong authentication as well as automatically restrict access to partner sites upon disabling a user's local Active Directory account. Since ADFS is integrated with other Microsoft identity management technologies, it rounds out a complete set of tools for internal and external authentication and authorization management. In particular, ADFS is built to integrate with new technologies like Atom, Authorization Manager, and Windows SharePoint Services. Since this technology is based on industry standards, organizations will not have to dictate specific products on partners, suppliers, in order to interoperate. This results in faster time to market and greatly improved deployment and development costs. IBM, Netegrity, Oblix, Open Network, RSA, and Ping Identity have all shown interoperation with this product. Now, let's take a look at how ADFS works schematically. ADFS extends its set of platform-level authentication services to support the extranet-located, non-domain web application scenario with ADFS. Now, when you use Windows Server and IIS for an extranet application, you can use Forms authorization and give users a SSO session cookie so they don't have to log on for access to any other web applications in a trusted domain. This is important since so many web apps are in fact a collection of applications. You don't want users being challenged over and over for credentials. An interesting variation on the scenario is the B2E scenario, where an organization has web applications that it would like employees to access from both inside the firewall and when traveling or at home without requiring VPN access and without requiring a separate duplicate identity in the extranet. Think Outlook web access, but for any web application. The integration of ADFS with Windows Integrated Authorization means that employees get Kerberos single sign-on from their work desktops and authenticate against the same Active Directory account when away from the office. The benefits of this scenario include single sign-on to a farm of IIS v6 web applications, stronger authentication via forms, client-side certificates, Atom support benefit security, and it enables support for Road Warrior applications. Now let's look at another scenario. ADFS enables the federation scenario, which is fundamentally different in that it breaks out authentication from the access control decision and places it at the user account side of the relationship. Instead of a user authenticating to an extranet site by typing her credentials, the user's corporate network and Active Directory environment, or home realm, automatically generates a SAML security token for the end user that, when presented to the resource or application, is used to grant access rights. The key to enabling this sort of distributed access control is the federated trust the application will require. Through federation, end users get SSO to all of their internal network applications through standard Windows Integrated Authorization, plus SSO to partner applications through federation. Federated SSO works with two types of applications. Claims-based applications, which are applications written specifically to consume ADFS claims through ASP.NET roles or Authorization Manager, and Windows-based web applications which use local Active Directory accounts. These include applications like SharePoint. In these applications, ADFS can automatically map a security token to a local Active Directory account, instantly enabling SSO for these applications, even outside the firewall. There are many benefits to this scenario as well. Single sign-on to internal and partner web applications, fewer passwords for fewer users to forget, lower password reset costs, centralized administration delegated to partners, automated restriction of partner application access, plus the ability to log inbound and outbound access requests. As you can see, we're dealing with a pretty involved scenario here. So let's back up for a moment and review. Here's an overview of how identity federation in a B2B scenario would work. And this is actually how our demo works as well. First, the user hits the web server for federated partner application. The web server's ADFS SSO agent looks for a security token to grant access. If the user doesn't have one yet, it sends the user to its resource-side federation server. The resource-side federation server looks at its list of federated partners to determine where it needs to send the user to get its security token. The first time this happens is called home realm discovery, and the server asks the user to provide some identifying data like an email address. All subsequent visits to that site, a cookie on the user's browser will tell the federation server what account the user is associated. The resource-side federation server then sends the user to its own corporate environment to get authenticated. If the user is already logged into Windows at work, then ADFS leverages the existing Kerberos ticket and doesn't need to ask for credentials. The account-side federation server now builds the required security token for the application. The server determines the claims it will insert in the token by evaluating the policy in the server against the data it finds for the user in Active Directory. Group memberships and attribute values are the most common ways that claims are given to users and put into the token. Also, at least one identity claim will be included in the token to provide the application with a unique identifier for the user. With the token in hand, the user is redirected back to the application where the SSO agent checks for a token, then asks the federated server to check the authenticity of the token against the certificate on file for that partner. Presuming the signature is valid, the claims inside the token are extracted and provided to the application, which uses the claims to provide the user context. No authentication happens for the user on the resource side, and no password is managed or even required by the application. Federation sounds like a great concept, but if it only worked between Microsoft environments, it wouldn't get very far. For federation to be a successful concept, it needs to be standards-based, and that's what WS Federation is for. Part of the WS-STAR set of web services specifications designed by Microsoft and other technology companies, WS Federation enables distinct security solutions to share identity information in a common format. This means, for example, that if a company managing users in Active Directory wanted to federate its users with an application provider that enabled access control with Nitegrity SiteMinder, that would be possible using WS Federation. A number of leading identity management companies have either been involved in the writing of the specs or pledged their support for the specification in their products. It's important to note there are two major components to WS Federation: the passive requester profile and the active requester profile. The passive profile supports federation between browser-based applications using HTTPS and is supported in ADFS v1 and R2. Active profile is a more advanced spec that supports rich client applications that speak SOAP instead of proprietary protocols like RPC, which is the future direction of Windows-based application development with technologies like Indigo. Active client support will be available in ADFS v2 in the Longhorn timeframe. Now let's look at a demonstration of ADFS. In this demonstration, we'll look briefly at the Federation Service snap-in and then see how ADFS enables federated identity access to a partner application. Federation trusts are managed in the ADFS console, a Microsoft Management Console snap-in in Windows Server, which provides a complete federation management environment. Here we manage our accounts, or inbound federations where we provide resources to external users. Our resources are inbound federations where we access resources from other organizations, and claims or authorization statements made about users. The Add Account Partner Wizard allows us to import a policy file that includes all of a partner's configuration and claim data. Companies with many accounts can publish or distribute their federation data to new accounts this way, making setup easier for their accounts. The Federation Service URI conforms to WS Federation semantics for identifying federation partners. WS Federation is a standard supported by identity management vendors like IBM, Nitegrity, Oblix, Open Network, RSA, and Microsoft that makes it possible for companies with different access management solutions to build federations. The Federation Proxy URL is used to redirect users to their home environments for authentication if the user is not currently authenticated. In a federation, a user authenticates against their home environment, which then shares authorization data about that user with external resources. No authentication happens at the resource, and no user passwords are passed over the wire for added security. With each access request, ADATUM will pass Tree Research a secure token with claims about the user packaged inside. For this reason, we need to use a signing certificate to verify the validity of a partner's claim. This also requires a trust to exist between the account and resource security realms. Examples of intranet federations include mobile employee access to web applications or cross-business unit federated access to applications like SharePoint. A request from ADATUM will come with at least one identity claim, used to identify the specific user, as we just defined here. At the end of this, we can choose to enable the account now or later, and by clicking Finish, we've set up one side of the Federation Trust. During the business negotiation, Tray Research informed ADATUM that it needed to define and send a variety of claims about its authorized users each time they try to access and use the ordering application. Again, a claim is simply an authorization statement made about a user. As you can see here, creating a claim is very simple. Notice that we're creating a group claim. We could have chosen a custom claim. This refers to how the claim is populated or how membership is defined by the administrator. ADFS supports the ad hoc creations of the two different types of claims. Now what we'll do is configure how ADATUM determines who gets to send these claims to Tray and how Tray will handle them before passing them to the application. ADATUM starts by defining a set of organization claims. These claims are a set of descriptive statements about people in ADATUM's business that have potential importance to federated applications. Apparently, ADATUM has other sourcing partnerships because they've already defined purchasing agent and purchasing administrator as claims they use. However, creating a new organization claim if they did need one is simple. First, we find the entry for our Active Directory account store. Then we create a new group claim extraction. Then we add the purchasing department group. And then we associate it with any organization claim. Note that we could have multiple extractions tied to the same claim and multiple groups in an extraction for more flexible granting of access rights. However, this extraction was actually already defined since ADATUM purchasing agents already present claims to other federated applications, so we can cancel the dialog. Eric Parkinson is an employee of ADATUM who is being promoted to a purchasing agent responsible for sourcing memory chips. Eric will be frequently using the Tray Research Extranet ordering site. We'll open Internet Explorer and look at the Tray ordering application. Tying the authorization of a user to his or her home domain has numerous benefits, including easier auto-delegated administration, more secure access, and better deprovisioning. If Eric were fired tomorrow, we can be certain his Active Directory identity would be disabled, and thus his access rights to all Federation applications would also be disabled, since in ADFS authentication happens at home. It may take time to disable an extranet identity if it happens at all. Note that typically ADFS would provide single sign-on for Eric immediately upon loading the application. But for the purposes of the demo, we've made authentication dependent upon placing an order, so we can watch the various URL redirects. Based on the current configuration, we can expect that Eric will not have access to place an order. ADFS ties the authorization to use federated applications to the home identity of a user, instead of requiring the creation and maintenance of a separate extranet user account for each partner application that an employee might need to use. Thus, we'll change Eric's privileges in Active Directory users and computers on the London domain controller. We'll add him to the purchasing admins and purchasing department groups. Once Eric has been added to the purchasing department, the next time he authenticates, he'll get a new set of claims that include the purchasing claims. To ensure that the new group policy settings are enabled for Eric's identity on this computer, we'll log off and log in again. Once we're logged back in, we can open the tray ordering application. As we proceed to the ordering location, we'll see that because Eric is a member of the purchaser group, he can now order memory. Moreover, because ADATUM is recognized as a gold partner from the claim tray associated with Eric's claim set before passing to the application, Eric sees a 15% discount. ADFS is comprised of many components that work together to facilitate the many scenarios possible with ADFS. First, the Federation service is the main component of ADFS. FS is a WS security compliant security token service. It is used to establish trust between security realms and issue security tokens created by Active Directory. The Federation service is designed to fit easily into an organization's current infrastructure. For example, an FS can integrate with user stores from Windows Server 2000 Active Directory, Windows Server 2003 Active Directory, or ADAM. And since the Federation service supports web farm-style deployments, that is, running multiple carbon copy images on a related family of machines, there are no performance sacrifices. Next, the Federation service proxy is the external-facing component of ADFS. Receiving and sending tokens over the internet, and providing a forms-based logon page for unauthenticated users. FS-P, as it's called, enables secure passive client interaction with the FS. The FS proxy supports account, logon, and resource logon roles. FS proxy holds trust relationships with one or more FSs, with all authentication credentials passed on to the appropriate FS, and all communications between FS and FS proxy servers secured. The WebSSO agent is an iSAPI extension that runs on IIS 6.0 and Windows Server 2003 R2. The WebSSO agent manages security tokens and authentication cookies for the web server. The SSO agent manages security tokens and authentication cookies for the web server. The SSO agent is responsible for intercepting incoming client URL requests for a protected resource and ensuring that a valid authentication token is presented. If no valid authentication token is presented, the SSO agent redirects the client to the appropriate FS proxy to begin the authentication and claims creation process. If a valid authentication is presented, the SSO agent provides the authorization data packaged in the security token to the target application. The SSO agent provides authorization support for two distinct types of web applications: those using traditional Windows-based authorization mechanisms, and also claims-aware ASP.NET applications that can authorize against claims in the security token, either using ASP.NET roles or Authorization Manager. The SSO agent can also write HTTP cookies in client browsers to facilitate web SSO. Authorization Manager is a component of Windows Server 2003 that provides a role-based access control infrastructure for applications. FS integrates with Authorization Manager to create organization-wide role-based access policies that can be triggered by claims received for a specific resource. This capability enables organizations to enforce corporate access policy from one central location at an administrative level, rather than embedding hard-coded access control policies in every application. Finally, ADFS is tightly integrated with Active Directory, retrieving user attributes and authenticating users against Active Directory, as well as using Windows integration, authentication, and security tokens created by Active Directory. ADFS works with both Active Directory and Atom. It's important to note that you can use Active Directory in Windows 2000 Server, Windows Server 2003, or Atom as the user store for ADFS. All the rest of the components require Windows Server 2003 R2, but the actual domain controllers do not have to be upgraded to use ADFS, so it's easier to deploy. Let's review what we've discussed to this point. We've discussed the various technologies behind Windows Server 2003 R2 identity and access management. Ultimately, they provide better security and less management when enabling access to applications across security boundaries. The features also allow you to manage identities across heterogeneous platforms and centralize management on a familiar platform without throwing away knowledge of other platforms. The core technologies that help to accomplish this are Atom, ADFS, Unix interoperability features, the web services architecture, and other Windows tools like WSS and AZMAN. Now let's move on and talk about the storage management features in Windows Server 2003 R2. We'll start by discussing the challenges of storage management today. Doesn't it seem as though storage demands have increased as hardware power has increased? Storage is estimated to grow at a rate of 60 to 100% per year. Managing storage growth effectively is a challenge for a variety of reasons. Adding more direct attached storage increases complexity. Networked storage solutions can be complex, and few IT professionals are storage experts. 35% of SMBs have moved from direct attached storage to network storage already, and another 40% of SMBs are considering moving to network storage. Costs of managing storage can be 10 times the cost of the storage itself. The process of consolidating file servers and storage is involved. It's complex and error prone, and there's potential disruption to end users. There are a couple key features in Windows Server 2003 R2 to help solve these problems. The two main storage management features in Windows Server 2003 R2 are, first, File Server Resource Manager, which we'll call FSRM, and Storage Manager for SANs, which we'll call SMFS. We'll explore the details of these features in the rest of this presentation, but briefly, FSRM is a new Microsoft Management Console snap-in that provides a suite of tools to help you understand, control, and manage the quantity and type of data stored on your servers. SMFS is a new MMC snap-in that helps you create and manage logical unit numbers. On fiber channel and iSCSI disk drive subsystems in your storage area network. Now let's discuss the details of these features. First, FSRM. FSRM is oriented around three key areas: capacity management, policy management, and quota management. Challenges in capacity management arise around your ability to determine existing storage capacity usage across the organization, your ability to determine whether usage effectively supports organizational goals, how well you can define and implement storage policies, and adjust the policies as capacity needs grow and as organization needs change. Policy management has its own challenges. For example, there is often no easy way to control the type of data stored on file servers. Unwanted content must be identified manually. Finally, user home directories often grow quickly, causing file servers to run out of space. Departmental shares can also grow unexpectedly. Administrators are only aware of storage crises when the server is already out of space. Now let's look at the user scenarios and benefits. A good capacity management solution will help you identify where storage capacity is used inefficiently, identify mechanisms to prevent future capacity misuse, and monitor usage patterns and utilization levels. An ideal policy management solution will help you to eliminate non-business files and improve storage utilization while reducing management costs. Implementation of policies to restrict unauthorized files will also help limit legal exposure, and it could even promote a culture of accountability. Quota management would help you control the amount of space used for a folder or share and limit its impact on server utilization. A good quota management solution will allow you to monitor disk space usage growth per volume, folder, or share, and ultimately slow down storage growth overall. So what does FSRM do? FSRM is a suite of tools that facilitates capacity management. Using FSRM, you can place quotas on folders and volumes, actively screen files, and generate comprehensive storage reports. This not only helps you to efficiently monitor existing storage resources, but it also helps you to plan and implement future policy changes. FSRM facilitates predefined and configurable capacity management. Predefined features include identification of large files, most and least used files. It can allow you to view files by owner or file group. It also allows you to place quotas on usage and to record file screening data in an auditing database, which can be used for reporting. Configuration through FSRM allows you to create multiple volumes and multiple shares or folders. Now let's take a closer look at FSRM policy management. FSRM policy management allows you to create rules and apply them to a folder tree or volume. The screening rules are based on file groups, apply to all user files in the folder, and file screening settings can be saved in a template. Passive and active screening are supported, and the screening events are recorded in an audit log. FSRM uses the same set of notification as quotas. Only NTFS volumes are supported, but usage is tracked in real time. Only those volumes with screening configuration are monitored, and the screening is based on file name patterns like file extensions and similar names. FSRM also has self-consistent volume configuration and cluster support. Next, let's explore quota management. FSRM quota management helps you to limit the size of a directory tree or volume. The quotas you create apply to all users' files in the directory. The limit can be soft or hard. Only volumes with quota configuration are monitored, and the quota usage is assessed based on disk size. There's support for special files such as compressed, sparse, named streams, hard links, and reparse points. There are multiple notification thresholds at configurable quota utilization levels. In other words, you can configure FSRM for notifications at multiple levels. Self-consistent volume configuration allows quota settings to travel with the volume. This is valuable for SANs and hot swappable disks. Now let's take a look at SAN management and provisioning. Small business and even medium-sized businesses want to use more sophisticated storage technology, but it's unattainable to them in some ways due to several barriers. First, current tools are expensive and complex. That makes it impossible for small businesses to adopt, and even makes the investment in hardware and knowledge for a medium-sized business a process. Even businesses that have good IT administrators often are not SAN experts. And they may have limited experience dealing with large storage solutions. Those businesses want the basic functionality enabling the administrator to easily share storage among multiple servers. SMFS offers basic, easy-to-use SAN management functionality, including device discovery, LEN creation, and storage allocation. These basic functions allow important technology to be deployed, such as shared storage solutions and clustering. There are some important fundamental points to keep in mind about SMFS. Large SAN solutions often have their own toolkits and often require specialized knowledge about the hardware and experience working with it in order to be efficient. The SMFS tools were built in such a way that they do not require a storage expert. General Windows administrators can perform array and LUN management. The tools are prevented via conventional MMC snap-ins. The solution is really targeted towards smaller-scale SANs that have been built out on simplified hardware. SMFS uses the VDS infrastructure, which acts as the management enabler. In the most simple sense, SMFS facilitates discovery of storage arrays on a fiber channel or iSCSI SAN, including storage array properties such as firmware information. SMFS allows you to create, delete, or expand storage array LUNs. In the process of creation, you can specify LUN options such as RAID configuration. SMFS also allows you to allocate LUNs to various servers on the SAN, as well as monitor that allocation and the status and health of the SAN servers. As we discussed in the previous slide, VDS is the facilitator of much of this functionality as it integrates iSCSI, ISNS, MPIO, and the HBA API, plus local storage management. Let's take a look at some of the technical details regarding VDS. SMFS uses both the hardware provider and software provider interfaces of the VDS API to manage storage. The hardware provider is software that translates the VDS APIs into instructions that are specific to the storage hardware. The capabilities of a hardware provider depend on the capabilities of the underlying storage hardware. So the degree to which each manufacturer implements the VDS API can vary. The software provider is host-based software that is supported by a kernel mode driver in the storage I/O stack. The software provider enables iSCSI and HBA API connectivity, as well as multipath I/O, or MPIO, for multipath management. Now let's take a look at a demonstration of these features. We'll look at key new functionality for simplifying storage management for businesses of all sizes. Storage area networks, or SANs, offer the benefit of centralized storage. But for many small and mid-sized companies, those benefits have simply been too expensive to take on, both in terms of cost and complexity. Windows Server 2003 R2 includes Storage Manager for SANs, or SMFS, a feature that integrates the essentials of SAN management directly into Windows Server 2003, opening the door to this storage solution to more organizations. We'll demonstrate some of this functionality by creating and assigning a logical unit in SMFS. SMFS is accessed via a conventional MMC snap-in, which we'll load manually. Once the MMC is loaded, to create a LUN, we simply click Create LUN from the LUN Management options in the snap-in. This opens the Create LUN wizard. SMFS offers IT administrators basic SAN functionality without requiring the specialized consulting services typically needed for successful deployment and trouble-free maintenance of storage area networks. Throughout the wizard, we dictate a number of specifications for the configuration of the LUN, including the name and size. If we were creating a LUN locally, we could also configure an NTFS volume for the LUN. Creating a LUN can take minutes or hours. It's recommended that we do not close the storage manager for SAN's console while a LUN is being created. If the session ends before the process completes, we might not be able to determine the completion status for the LUN. SMFS allows small and medium-sized organizations to tap the benefits of SANs without incurring the often prohibitive costs and complexity that traditionally accompany SAN solutions. Now let's look at the FSRM, or File Server Resource Manager. We'll start by loading the FSRM console. This is another MMC snap-in which we'll load manually. For several years, the ability to set quotas has been a feature of Microsoft operating systems. Now, with the feature enhancements of File Server Resource Manager, those quotas can be made much more useful by reporting a more accurate disk usage, with folder-level, not just volume-level, quota settings, advanced reporting like email, custom reports, command execution, and event logs, as well as templates for easy deployment of policy, and file screens to easily identify and remove unwanted files. This leaves more room for higher priority storage needs. FSRM actually consists of three components. These are quota management, file screening management, and storage reports management. Now we will create a quota template. This is a simple form which can be found under the options for quota templates in the quota management component of FSRM. We'll start by establishing the settings for the template. Note that we have the option to set notification thresholds. We'll create an email notification when the server exceeds its size limits to both the administrator and the user. We'll also log these events. Note that we can even create the email options and save the template when we have no mail server identified. This gives the user tremendous flexibility in configuring the server. We can add additional notifications to generate a warning when, say, 85% of quota is reached. FSRM enables system administrators to understand how storage is being used and to manage the use of their storage by generating reports, applying quotas to volumes and folders, and screening files on the server. Auto-quotas are a means by which we can apply quota templates to folders and subfolders, both subfolders which currently exist and those yet to be created within the folder. To create an auto-quota, we simply create a quota from the quota options in the snap-in and derive the properties from a quota template. We'll select the quota template we created just moments ago. And in a matter of seconds, a quota is applied to a folder on the file server based on that template. Now, we'll create a new file screen, and in the process save a file screen template based on the custom file screen properties that we define. The new template will be applied to the file screen so that a link is maintained between the file screen and the template. This is the same method we would use to create a quota template and apply it to an auto quota. We select all of the settings as to what we want to screen. For example, frequently space-consuming audio and video files. We can also dictate email message options and more. Based on our selections, we can save the file screen as a template and simultaneously apply the file screen to our chosen folder. FSRM helps organizations to better affect capacity, policy, and quota management in their growing data stores. We talked about DFS earlier, but it also applies here to our storage management scenario. As you know, DFS is not a new feature in Windows Server 2003 R2, but there are several improvements to it that make it worth a brief discussion. Basically, DFS virtualizes file servers and storage devices. DFS has a new interface in Windows Server 2003 R2, which provides a logical view of physical storage and of the global namespace, translating logical names to physical shares. It also has failover failback support, which gives it higher availability. And since the share location is transparent to users, it will appear that files are always available, whether or not the local server is always online. Now let's review the storage management benefits and enablers. By deploying Windows Server 2003 R2, you get all the tools that help you start to realize the Microsoft vision for efficient storage management. The features in Windows Server 2003 R2 enable simple provisioning for SANs, the ability to establish and manage file quotas, perform file screening, and extensive reporting, plus the ability to integrate Unix environments. The key enablers to accomplish this are the SAN management tools for IT generalists. FSRM, SMFS, VDS, and Unix interop features, plus Microsoft's extensive hardware compatibility testing. Now, our last agenda item is to talk briefly about how Windows Server 2003 R2 forms a robust application platform. Most businesses have a heterogeneous network with servers running various operating systems. These systems are deployed for a good variety of business reasons. But as business networks grow, the management overhead associated with maintaining these systems and the frequent duplicate file systems, directory servers, and application platforms can become overwhelming. Ultimately, you want a simple environment in which to manage both platforms, or unify the platforms in one environment. The Subsystem for Unix Applications, or SUA, provided in Windows Server 2003 R2 provides that. SUA allows you to compile and run native Unix applications on Windows servers. This allows you to take advantage of the latest developer tools and the robustness and ease of use of the Windows environment without having to give up large investments in Unix expertise or reinvest in extensive Windows developer expertise. SUA was built for Visual Studio 2005 and the .NET Framework 2.0, which enables Unix to Windows portability. Now we'll summarize. Windows Server 2003 R2 delivers, continuing the vision around the simplification of branch management, identity management, and efficient storage management. It also forms a robust application platform, enabling interoperability of Unix applications. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, you can visit www.microsoft.com/technet/TNT-ADD-50 for more information. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know the topic. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared to others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Now available are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals. And it is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional. You can choose to go and become a fully certified system administrator, or system engineer, or a desktop specialist. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Holly Dias, Senior Marketing Manager for TechNet.
Many of you may be familiar with TechNet events and the TechNet website. But have you ever realized the benefits of being a TechNet Plus subscriber? A TechNet Plus subscription is the most convenient and reliable resource for IT professionals evaluating, managing, and supporting Microsoft technologies. With a TechNet Plus subscription, you can evaluate Microsoft software without time limits. This benefit allows you to try products at your own pace and make informed decisions without worrying about the software expiring. TechNet Plus evaluation software includes the latest Microsoft operating systems, server applications, and Office products. With TechNet Plus, you can also save time resolving technical issues. TechNet Plus subscriptions include a range of support options, including the complete Microsoft Knowledge Base delivered each month on portable media, and two complimentary professional support incidents to address your technical roadblocks. TechNet Plus offers centralized access to current, authoritative technical guidance, software, and support resources from Microsoft. IT professionals around the world rely on TechNet Plus every day to help them build their technical expertise and be successful in implementing Microsoft solutions. For details, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/subscriptions. On the subject of TechNet resources, the new TechNet support page outlines all the support resources available for you. The enhanced TechNet troubleshooting and support page outlines all the ways IT professionals can get support assistance from Microsoft. From free online support options to subscription-based support, you'll find all your Microsoft support resources in one location at www.microsoft.com/TechNet/support. TechNet also provides a number of community resources. There are a number of free resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The TechNet newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post their technical questions, and because they are subscribers, are guaranteed a response to any technical questions by next business day from community experts or Microsoft support professionals. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can ever cover on this slide. Plus, the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details where you can attend a TechNet event live. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk with Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. Thank you very much for listening to this session.